It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, we'll get the inside scoop on the art of cartooning.
First, State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Evers gave his State of Education speech at the Capitol yesterday, where he denounced what he sees as an ongoing assault against public education by lawmakers.
The speech comes just days after State Representative Joe Sanfilippo called for a constitutional amendment that would allow the governor to appoint the school superintendent of schools.
We're joined now by the current office holder, State Superintendent Tony Evers, to talk about these recent discussions over Wisconsin's public education system. Superintendent Evers, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks. Hey, thanks, Rob, very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, you made the case in your speech and elsewhere that there's, in effect, an assault on public education coming from lawmakers, making things difficult for schools and teachers. Make the case. What are some examples of that?
Well, there's the last budget. It was a good example. There are just many things that school districts are now required to do that, frankly, I didn't believe had, first of all, any hearings and have a significant impact on schools. This is a small one, but the fact that the Joint Finance Committee passed as part of the budget bill the requirement that before somebody graduates, they have to have a civics test. Well, it'd be nice if the committee members had some input from teachers and administrators in the state on that issue. I mean, it's like I said, it's a small thing, relatively speaking, but it's just an example of how the continued taking away of local control is getting under people's skin and just makes it much more difficult for people to do their jobs.
Well, as we mentioned earlier this week, Representative Joe Sanfilippo introduced a plan that would allow the governor to appoint the person in your job instead of having to be elected by voters as it currently is. It would require a constitutional amendment to make that change. What's your reaction to that proposal?
It's wrongheaded. To say that's a great idea to take the vote away from parents and other community members who care about public schools, it's part of our Constitution. That decision was discussed and the pros and cons of it in 1848, and the people that wrote our Constitution decided at that time that public education is so very important in the state that they believe that the state superintendent should be elected by the people of the state. And I agree. It's worked and it continues to work. We have a strong public school system. And frankly, there's no reason to change. And, the whole idea of another political appointee, I think, is something that most people aren't going to feel very comfortable with.
We had Representative Sanfilippo here on the show earlier this week to talk about this idea. Here's part of his argument for making that change.
The fundamental question here is, are you happy with the state of our public school systems, or do you think we can do better? And if you're satisfied with two-thirds of the kids in our state not being able to read proficiently, then you're going to be okay with the status quo and want to keep it. But if you, like us, think that there's room for improvement, then I think you're going to want to make a change.
So he was making the case that there's a problem in Wisconsin schools with educational outcomes, and he definitely pointed toward that statistic saying about 30-some percent of kids tested proficient at proficient reading level in tests. How do you react to that?
Well, I can't believe a political hatchet man or woman is going to be able to make those reading scores any different than what they are now. Frankly, we spend a lot of effort making sure that all of our kids read proficiently. That number, frankly, is a reflection of the fact that in 2012, and maybe Representative Sanfilippo doesn't remember this. I do because I did it. We made the cut scores on those tests much more significant because we wanted to make sure, and we raised the stakes. And as a result of that, which had great support from everybody across the state, our test scores went down. Now, how is it that the governor, who's now running for president, can talk about how reading scores are on the way up in Wisconsin, and suddenly this guy is making the case that we need a political hatchet man and get rid of Evers and take away the vote of the people in Wisconsin? That's just inconsistent. It's hard to fathom where he's coming from, frankly.
We're talking to the state superintendent of public instruction, Tony Evers. He delivered his State of Education speech last night, reacting to some recent proposed legislation as well. Let's get into the state of education now, Superintendent
Sure.
Evers. Long term, are we seeing positive signs over the years here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, since 2009 and 10, we've seen graduation rates go up for all kids, but especially, you know, African-American kids, other kids of color. So that's doing well. Attendance is rates are going up. Suspensions and expulsions are going down. A whole number of issues. We've doubled the number of kids getting both college and high school credit at the same time in the last 6 years. So, yeah, I will be the first to admit we have some issues that we have to deal with in the state. We have the largest achievement gap around, but we are doing well, and we will continue doing well. And I think one of the reasons we have such a strong system is because the people of the state have had that vote and put people in this office over the years that understand education and will work hard for the kids of the state.
Let's talk about that achievement gap you just mentioned between white and minority, especially African-American mm-hmm. students. Where are we on that? What kind of things are you doing to try to tackle that gap among the biggest in the country?
Yeah, we had a what we call the Achievement Gap Task Force that consisted of teachers and principals from schools that had had success in closing the gap and in improving achievement, and they've done a wonderful job. We have a online presence with all their strategies that they provided. In addition, the department and this task force is also working hard with the institutions of higher education that prepare teachers so that teachers are prepared to work in a diverse climate and diverse communities that all across the state. We're seeing greater diversity. So we need to make sure that our teachers and folks that work in our schools are culturally competent and ready to go. We're going to make some headway there this way. We've put together some professional development modules online this last week that teachers can use to either be relicensed or be part of their educator evaluation system. So we're working hard at it, but this is something that didn't occur over the last 6 years. It occurred since 1900s when kids started we started allowing kids of color to go to school.
Republicans in the legislature say one solution, more choices, whether it's charters, voucher schools, other options to the neighborhood public school, and suggested, as Representative Sanfilippo did earlier this week, that you and your office have stood in the way of that. Should that be part of the solution? Are you standing in the way of a possible solution?
I have yet to see in my 6 years a voucher or choice bill that did not pass and was signed by the governor. So it is a laugh for him to say that somehow I'm standing in the way of that. Here's my position on that. The fact is we've got more choice and choice options for our kids than ever before. If I have any concerns about vouchers and other options, it gets resources that would normally be used for public schools, and to advantage those systems over public school systems, I just think doesn't make sense. But the fact of the matter is, you look at the achievement levels of all those schools, and you look at them in Milwaukee in particular, where choice charter regular public schools are the fabric of the community. For the most part, there is absolutely no difference in the achievement level of the children there. So I would say that from an educator's point of view, it doesn't seem to have moved the needle. I believe we have to work in other ways to close that achievement gap rather than worrying about how schools are governed and whether they're, they're all schools and they're all working hard to improve kids' lives. It's just those extra choices that now are in place that they really haven't made a large difference. I mean, parents have choice now. Yes, that is true. But as far as the actual outcomes, there hasn't been a moving of the needle.
We've heard concern sometimes from teachers who call in, some policy experts saying morale is a problem now for teachers in Wisconsin, having trouble recruiting, retaining teachers, even people not going into the teaching profession. How do you think that could be turned around?
Well, the main thing, and I mentioned this yesterday in my speech, is that the political rhetoric, just not just in Wisconsin, across the country, is such that we've devalued the role of teachers and the profession of teachers, and it's no wonder that we are seeing many fewer young people going into the profession, others leaving early. This has to change. I mean, our teachers in the state are heroic, and I applaud their great work. But I am seeing it. I've talked to college kids that are thinking about going into teaching on campuses, and they're worried about it. And so if they're connecting this political rhetoric to the issue, it is real. It is not just something that I dreamed up to talk about in a speech.
If you had your druthers, what would be your top policy priority for lawmakers, maybe something that you and the Republican leadership could agree on to move forward on schools?
Well, I would love to, and it's just a political hot potato, but I would love to find a different way to equitably distribute resources for our schools. There has to be a different way. It's broken. I've got a plan that I've proposed several times, and it gets legs, and then it dies. But we have to find. We're turning into a state of haves and have-nots. Those that can pass local referenda have it. Those that don't have it, and that is just not the way. I don't want my grandkids attending a school that is a have-not. We should be able to come to grips with that. That is really not a political issue per se. It's an issue of fairness. I think that's absolutely critical.
Superintendent Evers, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Take care, Rob.
That was Tony Evers, superintendent of the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. He delivered his State of Education address last night. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert.
The Kenosha Festival of Cartooning is in full swing. The festival runs through Saturday. It brings internationally recognized cartoonists to the stage in Kenosha and to schools in the city to introduce kids to the art of cartooning.
Bill Morrison joins us now. He's in town for that event. He's a comic book writer, illustrator, and co-founder of Bongo Comics. He served as art director for the TV show Futurama. And his current work includes the new series Dead Vengeance for Dark Horse Comics and the revival of Roswell Little Green Man. He's the current president of the National Cartoonist Society. Bill, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, I understand you're speaking from one of Kenosha's schools. What do you want kids to know about what you do and why maybe they should think about considering life as a cartoonist?
Well, we just finished an assembly where we drew for a whole auditorium full of kids, and it was encouraging to see so many of them, and we understood they were all art students. We at first thought it was going to be just a general assembly, but there were so many art students, and it's really encouraging because cartooning is alive and well, and we just kind of want kids to know that it's an option. If they are incessant doodlers like we all were when we grew up, there's an outlet for that, and you can actually make a living.
Right. When you're a kid and you learn about the professions, it's usually something like firefighter, police officer, doctor. What do you want people to know about how viable it is to be a cartoonist and how you yourself knew that that was the job for you?
Well, I think I knew I wanted to be an artist from age 3. And I don't think I really remember this incident, but my sister, who was 11 years older than me, sat me down at the kitchen table, and she drew a stick figure, just a stick man. And she said, "I want you to imitate what I just drew, and I want to kind of test you and see how you draw. And I'll come back in 10 minutes, and I'll see, I'll take a look and see what you did." So she tells me that I looked at the drawing, and I must have realized that I could add more details than what she did, and that people weren't just a stick, that they had a width to their bodies and, fingers on their hands. And so I started adding all these details and clothing and hair. And she came back and she kind of flipped out. She was about 14 and she just went crazy. And she told me, "Billy, you're going to be an artist someday."
Wow, that's an amazing story.
Yeah, and I always remembered that growing up. People would say, "Bill, what do you want to be when you grow up?" And I would just say, I'm going to be an artist because my sister told me I was. So I think a lot of kids have drawing ability, and I see it in a lot of kids. But if they don't get encouraged and nurtured and you know, get a lot of props growing up for their drawing, I think they lose it. And I think if they get that encouragement either from teachers or from family members, it really makes an impression, and it gives you a goal to shoot for.
Well, we live in an age where arts programs are sometimes on the chopping block. Do you think that that is to our detriment, both for the future of cartooning and just for giving kids an outlet to draw?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely to the detriment. Even if kids don't go into art as a profession, it's just such an important part of our culture, and it's always a shame when that gets overlooked. When I was a kid, art funding always got cut in our schools, and art and music both. And I just learned to be a drummer a couple of years ago. I started taking lessons. And my only regret is that I didn't do it sooner because I love it. I don't make a living at it. It's not part of my profession. But whenever I get to play drums with a band, I have such a great time. And it's just an enrichment that I wish I would have had in my younger years.
We're talking with Bill Morrison right now. He's a comic book writer, illustrator, and co-founder of Bongo Comics. He was also art director for the TV show Futurama. He's in Wisconsin right now for the Kenosha Festival of Cartooning. Now, for Bongo Comics, where you worked for a long time, you created comics based on The Simpsons and the Futurama. Did you draw on what you loved most or maybe what bugged you most as a kid who read comics when you were doing that job?
Yeah, a lot of my experience growing up reading comics went into that. I love comics. I loved comics growing up, and I still love comics. To me, it's the coolest thing about it is it's basically making movies on paper. And when you're involved in a film production, it usually takes a whole lot of people doing many different jobs to make a project come together. And one of the things I love about comics is, this doesn't happen in every case, but if you want to, you can do the whole thing. You can write it, you can draw it, you can ink it, letter it, color it. You can print it now on your desktop printer. You can even distribute it and sell it. And part of the job of drawing comics is, it's actually many jobs because it's you're the set designer, you're the costumer, you're acting when you're drawing the characters, emoting in the panels and doing different gestures. So it's very much like making a film, but one person can do the whole thing. So your personal vision can sort of unfold on the page, I think, in a really satisfying way that doesn't exist anywhere else.
That's interesting because comics today, they face a lot of competition. There's electronic media, there's video games, all kinds of things kids can do. Can you make the case for why it's important that kids remember comics and keep on reading them? Maybe parents even should keep on nudging them in that direction.
It's kind of tough because comics can be expensive compared to a lot of other entertainment. So I think the best case I can make for it is comics are changing. And, you look at a paper comic book and it might cost, $3 or $4, whereas, when I was growing up, it was 12 cents. So that's a huge jump in price. And if a kid wants to buy a video game that they can play over and over and over again and spend many hours on, they'll usually go for the video game because it's, it's something that they're not going to enjoy for a half hour and then never pick up again. So they get a lot of long-lasting enjoyment out of it. However, with comics, it's not just entertainment. It's art. It's storytelling. And now with digital comics, you can actually read your comics on your handheld devices. One of the things that I'm doing with Bongo is we just developed a Simpsons comic reader app. So now most of our Simpsons comics are available to read on your iPhone or your iPad, and we're now working on a Futurama app. So the cost is coming down. It's something that I think, you know, is going to be more and more an affordable option, for, not only for entertainment, but, you know, just for the art of it. I mean, the art is incredible, you know. And I don't want to just toot the Simpsons and Futurama horn because I'm a fan of so many comics, and there's so much brilliant art being produced and storytelling and original ideas. And a lot of the movies that you're seeing today are coming from those comic book ideas and those comic book characters. So it's something that I really think needs to stay alive, and it's really worthwhile. It's very rewarding.
And Bill, just briefly before we let you go, what is it like getting together with all these famous, notable cartoonists, getting together at the Kenosha Festival of Cartooning?
It's a lot of fun. And we're all from different disciplines and different mediums and art forms. We have comic strip artists who appear in the newspapers. I myself work in animation and in comic books. We've got illustrators. We've got a guy who works for Mad Magazine. And we love coming together. We come together once a year as a much bigger group with the National Cartoonist Society for our Reuben Awards weekend. And, you know, we have so much in common, but we've also got our little peculiar differences in what we do.
And we leave it there. Bill, sounds like a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
That's Bill Morrison, comic book writer, illustrator, and co-founder of Bongo Comics. He was art director for the TV show Futurama. He's currently in Wisconsin for the Kenosha Festival of Cartooning, which runs through Saturday.
The Futurama theme song there. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Food Friday regular Lori Skelton ran into some artichokes at a recent farmer's market and set herself an ingredient challenge. So she's been experimenting with artichokes over the last couple of weeks.
And we want to hear from you. How do you like to cook with artichokes? How do you like to eat them? What's your favorite dish with artichokes in it? And what questions do you have about cooking with artichokes? Maybe if you've never done it before but want to give it a try. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Lori Skelton is a food lover and a cooking enthusiast here at WPR, and she's a Food Friday regular. She joins us in studio now. Lori, welcome back.
Hello. Good to be here.
So tell us, how did you start to get interested in artichokes?
They show up on a restaurant menu, and I will occasionally order the dish. I've had the pick the leaves off, dip them in butter or vinaigrette, and scrape them against your teeth. Never was that fond of them in a restaurant, and I've never cooked with them because they really weren't that good in a restaurant. And then walked past Jones Valley Market table at the farmer's market here in Madison. They had the most they looked like big emeralds, the most beautiful green small artichokes, and I thought, okay, I'm going to get over my fear of cooking with these things. Sadly, by the time I got back to the market to start working with the artichokes, the season was over. Because Wisconsin can get so hot in the summer, it's very difficult to grow artichokes here. They grow in California almost exclusively in this country. And then certainly in Mediterranean climates, you need something while there's heat in the day, temperature drops at night in order for an artichoke to properly set.
So we can still find them in the grocery stores, probably.
Absolutely.
Imports from out of state. Let's start with the basics there. You know, looking at this thing, I remember the first time I encountered an artichoke that someone, a friend's family, had cooked. I thought, okay, what do I eat? What do I do with this here?
If it's been properly prepared, most of the hard, what we call leaves, they are actually part of a flower. Artichokes are a thistle that has not yet bloomed. So what we call the leaves are technically called the bracts, B-R-A-C-T-S, of an artichoke. If it's been properly prepared, the toughest outer leaves have been snapped off and trimmed so that the immature, prickly leaves inside, what we call the choke, have been removed. Then you will have tender leaves and a nutty, creamy heart. Somebody has referred to this as the caviar of the artichoke plant, is that heart right at the bottom. It's not a great deal of food, but I did find out that when it's well prepared, it is worth it. You take the leaves off one at a time, and as we noted at the top of the program, it sounds a little funny to explain, but once you do it, it makes perfect sense. Hold it so that the meat of the artichoke is against your bottom teeth. You close your top teeth on it very gently and then pull. And that will scrape off. Usually it's only the bottom third.
Right, it's not a lot of food, but what's there is delicious.
Absolutely. If you find that you pull off a leaf and it still feels tough, that probably means it hasn't been cooked enough. A lot of people will boil or steam them. I actually found that roasting artichokes will preserve a lot of the flavor. And then, of course, a lot of people will roast an artichoke by stuffing lovely things between the leaves or the brocks, whether it's herby breadcrumbs, which is how they do it a lot in France. In Italy, they love putting variations of pork products in it, prosciutto or sausage. Mm. I know in Mediterranean countries, they also use spiced lamb. And again, pull off the leaf. You've got some of that stuffing on the leaf. Put it against your teeth and pull. And then you've got the combination of the lovely artichoke as well as the stuffing.
So just to recap, so you can eat what's on the underside of the leaves,
right?
And then you can strip all that away and eat the interior, the heart of the artichoke.
The heart of the artichoke. It's usually only a couple of bites, but it has a very different flavor. It's more nutty. The leaves of the artichoke have a wonderful bitterness to them. And you get to the heart, though, and there it gets a little bit sweeter, a little bit creamier again. And so you've got two completely different taste sensations in one little vegetable.
Yeah. And you mentioned oven roasting. Give us the basics. How would we oven roast an artichoke?
That's so easy. You cut them in half rather than pulling off all of the leaves on the outside. Oh. So you can keep a few more of the leaves on that way. Once you cut them in half, then it's very easy to strip out the prickly purple leaves on the inside. Strip out the choke, douse them with olive oil, maybe a little bit of lemon juice, a little bit of salt. Throw them in the oven for about 350, 375 until they're nice and soft and pliable.
Mm, that sounds yummy. I've never tried that before.
I think they do hang on to more of the artichoke flavor. They probably take a little longer than steaming or boiling
sure.
would, but I really think it's worth it.
We're talking with Food Friday regular and cooking enthusiast Lori Skelton right now. We're talking today about the artichoke. Maybe you were intimidated like Lori once was at this sort of thistle, I guess it is, we're finding
Absolutely.
Out. But it's a tasty thistle, and it's worth eating. We're finding out how. And we'll take our first caller now, Glenn in Heartland. Glenn, hi.
Hi. I grew up eating artichokes from a little kid in Italian families, so I have
of
a few
course.
Recipes that we use. Basically, the ones that you mentioned where you steam them or boil them, and then you just eat the leaves, and then when the leaves are done, we trim those off and then eat the heart. So using olive oil and spices in the olive oil.
What kind of spices flavor. Do you like in your olive oil?
We usually put some oregano in.
Yes.
And then salt and pepper.
Okay. Have you ever tried working with thyme or chervil?
No.
Okay. I worked with thyme a lot when I was cooking. Didn't have a chance to try the chervil, so I'm hoping somebody knows what that's like. I'm told that's an amazing combination.
Chervil?
Chervil.
It's like C-H, right?
C-H-E-R-V-I-L.
I thought it was chervil, but it's chervil.
And chervil
I just learned everything here. This is great.
I could be pronouncing it wrong, but...
I'm probably wrong.
And what is it?
C-H...
No, what is it?
Herb,
oh, it's
right?
an herb.
It's
a green
an herb.
Herb.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was a liqueur, and then I thought, that's an unusual
That works,
choice.
Too.
Yeah.
Actually, you can make a great liqueur from artichokes and a few other things. It's called Cinar. Mm. That's Italian. And I had to buy it for one recipe and ended up making some really wonderful aperitifs with it.
Glenn, thanks a lot for the call. And Glenn mentioned some spice options. Some people, we already mentioned, just dip in butter. What other kind of things have you encountered people using as either a glaze or a marinade to cook it in or a dip?
Dips, aside from butter, light vinaigrettes, maybe some Dijon. If you really want to get decadent, make your own mayonnaise or aioli. A lot of garlic in your creamier dressing. I didn't go so far as to try the ubiquitous Wisconsin ranch dressing, but I suppose that wouldn't be bad.
Nothing does not go with ranch dressing. Well, Lori, I want to dig into your recipes. Let's talk about the artichoke dip first, because this is the greatest hit of the artichoke, I think. I love it. Tell us what one was in yours.
Before you do, Lori, we measure the success of dishes by how quickly they disappear here at WPR. I think this might be a record. This is a big crock pot full of dip or a container full of dip.
I made a double batch and it was gone in 15 minutes.
And this is different than your usual artichoke dip.
Well, a little bit different. Going online, I mean, I've had hot artichoke dip before. Yeah, it's pretty tasty. How could it not be tasty? Most of what you'll see online, including from the likes of Paula Deen and Rachel Ray, is take a can of artichokes in water, add a cup of mayonnaise, a cup of Parmesan cheese, maybe some garlic, throw it in the oven for half an hour. How could it not be good? I figured if I'm going up against the likes of the Food Network, I have to up my game here. So I came up with something that you can make the day before. It'll still be cooked slightly, so all you have to do is throw it in the microwave for 5 minutes. So it makes a great thing to bring for a at-work potluck. And what mine has, in addition to Gruyere cheese instead of Parmesan, is ricotta instead of mayonnaise. That makes it a little bit lighter. I had a lot of people tell me they liked that this had a lighter texture than most artichoke dips they've had. There's also a little bit of fresh green pepper, a little bit of seeded tomato, green onions, and then salt, pepper, lemon juice, plenty of thyme. Several people suggested that it needed a little bit of heat, so you can put cayenne or paprika or Aleppo pepper in it. One person suggested, for anyone who doesn't need to have it vegetarian, throw in some bacon. And yes, that would be so good, even though I didn't do that this time.
We've got this recipe on the Central Time Facebook page. Can you talk us through how it all comes together, Lori?
You do need to get some of the vegetables cooked because, again, you're not going to have that half an hour in the oven. So I saute cloves of garlic with green pepper, the tomato, the artichokes, not so that they're brown, just so that they're cooked through and that you've gotten some of the liquid of the tomatoes and the artichokes cooked off. And then you just mix it up with the green onions and the cheese and however you want to spice it. If you're serving it right away, serve it right away. Or if you're not, let it rest for 10 minutes, then cover it, throw it in the refrigerator, and pull it out when you're ready.
Would this be good cool as well as warm? You microwaved it, I think. You heated it up a little for us here.
I suppose it would be good cool. We didn't have a chance to find out. I mean, this really
so
went
further
quick.
Experimentation is necessary, is what
I
you're saying.
Are you saying I should bring it in during
that
the pledge
is what
drive?
I'm saying, yes.
All right, I will do that.
It would have been served hotter, but I didn't let you put it back in the microwave because I wanted to start eating it right away. I'll admit to this now. We're talking to Food Friday regular Lori Skelton about cooking with artichokes.
And we're taking your calls on this. What do you love to make with artichokes? What's your favorite thing about cooking with them? And do you have questions about how to use them? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We've got that artichoke dip recipe there on the Central Time Facebook page. Your calls, more artichoke advice coming up after a look at the news with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation now about artichokes with Food Friday regular Lori Skelton.
And we're taking your calls. What's your favorite artichoke recipe? How do you like to serve, use artichokes in the kitchen? What's the best dish you've ever had? And do you have a question about how to cook with artichokes? Call 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page and find Lori's recipe for artichoke dip there. It was real good.
And we go to our callers. Now we've got Cheryl joining us in Hanover. Cheryl, hi.
Hi, how are you today? Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to. What are you doing with your artichokes?
Oh, everything I can. Artichokes are the best food in the world.
Ooh.
And I learned that from my students from España.
Ah, yes.
And they taught me how to make paella with artichokes.
Yes.
And I mean, we had artichokes in everything, and I even learned how to say it in Spanish, which is pronounced something like alcachofa.
Yes, that's very similar to I guess the original North Africans who cultivated it. That's almost exactly how they would say it.
Exactly, with the TH, because
yes,
they're from Spain. And I learned to cook with those, and my two sons, who are grown men now, just love them. We cook them by boiling them and dipping them in butter and garlic, and we try them with olive oil. And I love them with rosemary. And we try them with everything. I use the hearts. I buy them raw. I get them from the CSA if I can.
Well, you're an artichoke aficionado. She's done it all.
Oh, yeah.
So Spanish cooking, Lurie, is that something that you investigated, that sort of version of artichokes?
One of the dishes that I didn't bring in but thought was so good, this is going to be a little bit Moorish, but braising chicken thighs with a combination of artichokes, green olives, and chickpeas. This would have been braised in a broth that had turmeric in it and lemon, some red pepper, cumin, coriander, and cinnamon. And I think that could go either way on the Iberian Peninsula. Right. It was amazingly good, and the leftovers were incredible. That's a great one to bring in to work the next day.
Cheryl. Thank you for bringing that up and sharing your artichoke enthusiasm there.
A lot of enthusiasm. We'll go next to Joe in Wausau. Joe, hi.
Hi. I have a recipe for you guys.
Yes.
Go for it, Joe.
So what I do is normally I'll steam the artichokes, but first, after cleaning them and all that, I'll stuff them with breadcrumbs, salt, pepper, and we put pork sausage in there.
Yep.
And then after we cook them for a while, we also do a dipping sauce, which is garlic, mayo, and capers. And it's really good. It goes really good with the kind of the breading and the. Oh yeah, we also do Parmesan cheese in the breading stuffing that we put in the artichokes.
So you're combining the best of French and Italian in your stuffing, and then you're making an aioli that has even more salt to it. That would be amazing.
Sounds great, Joe. So stuffing artichokes. We hadn't gotten to that yet. Is that common? Well, you'd mentioned kind of putting stuff in amongst the leaves. Same basic concept. Yeah.
And what Joe is doing here, he's just combining a lot of lovely things. Obviously, you have to be very, very patient when you're stuffing. I find it interesting that he says he actually steams them after they've been stuffed. That's not something I would have tried. Every stuffed artichoke recipe I came across says you should put them in the oven. So if you're steaming them, Joe, that's really fascinating.
Talking to Lurie Skelton, a Food Friday regular. Our topic today, artichokes. A lot of enthusiasm amongst you on the artichoke, it turns out. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. Recipe for artichoke dip on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go next to Travis joining us in Appleton. Travis, hello.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, thanks.
My favorite dip to make is very, very salty lemon butter. That really works great. And then I'll take the heart and I chop it up into little pieces with my spoon, and I put the chunks all in that bath of butter and lemon and salt, and I just eat it right out of the rest of the dipping sauce. It's amazing. The question I'm calling with is actually, one time my uncle made baby artichokes, and they were small, like, you know, tennis ball size. Do you know where you can get those? Have you seen those anywhere in Wisconsin available?
That's what got my interest piqued, is that's what I saw at the farmer's market. The tricky thing is, unless you set out to cultivate them, they are kind of difficult to find as baby artichokes. By the time they get to Wisconsin, they're pretty hardy. If you know of somebody who has them, make friends with them and see if they'll give them to you early. Or if you happen to have some contact with the Madison Farmers Market, find out when Jones Valley from Spring Green is going to be coming in with their artichokes next year. You're right, they're difficult to find, but boy, when you get them, you've got even more of those tender, tender leaves to play with. And a baby artichoke would also be really, really good to saute with a little olive oil and white wine, and then throw in a splash of cream at the end and toss it with your pasta. Wow. I made that for myself last night with the last of my artichokes, and oh boy, was that good.
That sounds delicious. Another one you've got to bring in, I think.
No, this is one that has to be done a la minute, and I don't think we've got a big enough kitchen. There would be a stampede, and there'd be nothing left of me.
True.
Travis, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go next to Willie on the line, also in Appleton. Willie, hi.
Hi. Hey, I just wanted to mention a couple of years ago I was in Milwaukee and had artichoke heart pizza made with feta cheese. It was the best non-traditional pizza I've ever had.
Mmm, that does sound good. There is a traditional pizza in Italy that they call the Four Seasons Pizza. You have artichokes for spring, olives for summer, mushrooms for autumn, prosciutto for winter. So it sounds like you got the Greek side of that pizza by throwing in some feta cheese. But yeah, that's artichokes. That's a good place to use the jarred artichokes that are marinated in oil. That's usually a problem when you're cooking, but if you're going to use them on pizza, go ahead and use the ones that are marinated in oil.
Great. Well, thank you so much for that call, Willie. And we're going to go next to Chris in Wales. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I'm a professional chef, and I learned to love artichokes when I worked in New York City, both in a French restaurant and an Italian restaurant. The French restaurant preparation was called barigoule, which is a Provençal dish of artichokes braised with onions, garlic, and carrots.
I heard about it. I didn't try it. Good for you.
Okay. And then the Italian restaurant simply fried them in a deep fat fryer, served them with shaved Parmesan and a little bit of garlic mayonnaise.
Let me just ask you, Chris, so you say you deep fried them, just the hearts?
No, we'd like to work with the baby artichokes.
So you did the whole thing?
They're tender, and they're easier to work with and easier to prepare.
It's how they do it in Rome.
Yes.
Interesting. Deep fat frying. I was trying to think of a way to batter fry these, but with the tough part you don't eat, you'd be wasting a lot of batter.
Tempura artichokes.
Because then all the bars can have it.
Tempura. This is Wisconsin. You beer batter them. I might actually have to, if I can get baby artichokes next year, I'll try beer battering them and see what happens.
We're going to hold you to that.
Okay.
Real quick, Laura, you also did an artichoke pesto.
This was something that you blended up in the food processor with pistachios and a little bit of olive oil and parsley. It's not as runny as a traditional pesto, but this makes amazing stuffing for chicken or fish. It makes an amazing twice-baked potato.
Is this something we could do with jarred artichokes, since you say the fresh stuff?
Absolutely. You can get jarred artichokes with olive oil, not always the greatest to cook with. If you get the ones in water, this would be perfectly fine to use the ones in water. If you can find them, there is such a thing as cocktail artichokes in water. That's just the heart and the very tenderest leaves. Those are actually going to be a slightly stronger flavor.
Well, Lori, thank you so much for coming on and talking artichokes today.
My pleasure.
It was Lori Skelton, a cooking enthusiast, artichoke enthusiast here at WPR and a Food Friday regular. She was with us to talk about cooking, and you can find some of these recipes for artichokes over on the Central Time Facebook page, including the artichoke dip.
Doesn't get the hullabaloo it once did, but it's the fall premiere season for big broadcast TV networks. We'll be seeing, or in many cases not seeing, new pilots and lots of new shows making their debut over the course of the month.
And, well, maybe not by coincidence, it's a big anniversary in TV history. On this day in 1964, The Addams Family made its debut, featuring Gomez, Morticia, Uncle Fester, and the rest of the gang.
I remember watching the show. It was black and white, but I think of this as, a show of my childhood, except it aired for three seasons about 5 years before I was born. Did you watch Addams Family?
I remember seeing it as a kid, too. I'm assuming it was reruns, because I think that was in black and white. So there's our first clue.
Yeah, I think we had a lot of UHF stations where I grew up that basically put on whatever was really, really cheap. And I think the Addams Family, but it was a fun show.
It's endured. Those characters have gone on to they just keep on going, as we know.
Yeah, I think the plot was always the same. Like, a normal person, like the banker or somebody, visited, and then they were freaked out by the weird stuff the Addams Family did. And I think I just summarized the plot of every single Addams Family episode.
And also on this day in 1965, Get Smart started its run with Don Adams as the bumbling spy Maxwell Smart. Both great theme songs. And we're going to go to the news with the Addams Family right here on Central Time.